I think the question that was asked was, firstly, with regard to taking a stance, when we learn different opinions, different understandings in Hashkafa, and one feels like a certain opinion resonates with him more, when does one reach a point where one should really take a stand and say, that's what's right? And secondly, if I understood correctly, the question that really is an adjunct to this question is, being that our learning isn't theoretical, it's a living Torah, and this is the way we live our lives, so then isn't there a point where we really should connect to the concepts we're learning and feel this is the truth and this is right, and not just learn it and say, well, there's this understanding and there's that understanding and there's a third understanding. We have to connect beyond that because this is the way we're living. I'm not sure I can discern in answering, and I'm not sure I'm able to answer either one, but I'm going to try to answer both at the same time. I walked into a store, a furniture store, the other day, and there was a question about which bed is better. So the seller said, look, I'm not the biggest expert on beds. I've been selling beds for 10 years. There's another guy here who's been selling beds for 40 years. He understands much better than me how each bed is built and how each bed is made. Let's call him over and ask him about the beds. So they call over that seller, and the seller says, ooh, you want to know between these two beds? Even though the price difference is minimal, this bed is 10 times as good for the posture, for the sleeping, for carrying the weight, for lasting a long time, the way it's built. He starts giving them a whole speech. In walks a young guy, 15-year-old kid. And the guy finishes his speech. He says, you're wrong. He says, what do you mean I'm wrong? He says, that bed's better. What do you mean that bed's better? You can't compare. So he said, I'm telling you that bed's better. So the seller looks at him and says, now what do you know about beds? So I'm leaving out the beginning of the story. The beginning of the story was that there was a halachic question in the store, and this young man had just learned all the halachot that pertain to that halachic question. So when the halachic question came up, the young man said, you know, I just learned this, and the answer is A. And the seller, who was a big expert on the beds, told him, no, the answer is B. So he said to him, I'm telling you that it says here and here and here and here and here and here and here that the answer is A. And the seller said, no, it doesn't sound right to me. The answer is B. Halachic question. So the seller tells him, I don't think you're right. So the guy waited until the seller was talking about beds, his expertise. And when they had this question that they're calling in this big expert, and the man says, after 40 years of experience, I'm telling you, this bed is better. So he walks up to the guy and says, no, that bed's better. So he says, well, what do you know about beds? So he tells him, and what do you know about halacha? The Maharal writes that Hashem made the Torah in a way that every Jew feels connected to the Torah. Sometimes people come and they haven't learned much and they start arguing with me about philosophical concepts. And I'm listening and I feel like you don't begin to know what you're talking about. How come you're arguing with me? Like, you're quoting sources, you're misquoting, you're misunderstanding. Why are we having this argument? Let's just open the text. Let's learn. It's not an argument. You know, we're arguing in the air. A guy tells me, in the Torah, it says, "My desani lach al ta'as lechavcha." I said, no, it doesn't say it in the Torah. So he says, yeah, it does. I said, no, no such pasuk. I was sitting with a guy, and he started quoting a pasuk, and one pasuk after the other telling me what to do. And every pasuk he quoted, I said, there's no such pasuk in the Torah. So the guy says, yeah, it says in Mishlei. I said, no, no pasuk in Mishlei like that. So it says in Kohelet, no such pasuk in Kohelet. So the guy says, but it says it in the Tanakh. Said, no, it doesn't. It's a Gemara. It doesn't say it in Tanakh. One thing after another, he's quoting. He's like, come on, you want to quote me things. I was talking to another guy who holds himself to be a professor of Judaism, and he starts telling me about a biblical mitzvah. This is a takana she'en ha'tzibur yachol la'amod ba. This is a rabbinic institution, and we have rules with rabbinic institutions that if the congregation can't live up to it, so it's nullified after a period that we see the congregation didn't live up to their rabbinic institution. So I'm listening to the man, and I'm looking at him in disbelief. Come on, you're a professor. You're telling me about a verse in the Torah that's biblical. This is a rabbinic institution that the congregation can't live up to. But the man doesn't know what he's talking about. The man is just saying, takana shena tzibur chol amod ba, and he doesn't realize that when he says the word takana, it has very specific halachic implications. The takana doesn't just mean anything the congregation can't live up to. The congregation didn't live up to the commandment of not serving idols. Everyone served the Hegel, and then later on throughout our history, Jews were serving idols. So what do you say? The commandment's nullified? Jews didn't live up to this commandment? Doesn't exist anymore? No, we don't say that. We say that our tariag mitzvahs, just like the word when the Torah was given. But explains the Maharal, why is it that we have this problem? Because Hashem made it that every Jew feels connected to the Torah. And when we open the Torah, we feel that's my Torah. We won't open a book of physics or astronomy or Greek philosophy. We won't open any other book and feel like we're entitled to an opinion when we just open the book. But you ask any 7-year-old about what he's learning, he has an opinion. You ask him about the Yetzias Mitzrayim and 2 understandings in Rashi and the Makos, he has an opinion. And Hashem made it that we should feel connected to the Torah. It's a positive thing. But we have to know to limit it. The Maharal says, it's a positive thing. Hashem made it that every Jew feels that's a part of me and I'm entitled to an opinion in it. And there's an aspect where he's right. If he'll learn enough, then one day his opinion will be pure and logical and true and he'll be entitled to an opinion. But not today. Not yet today. So when we discuss maintaining a stance, we have to know where we're holding. It's like that 15-year-old entering the store and saying, no, that bed's better. What do you know about beds? The man has 40 years of experience. You don't know anything about beds. By the same token, if I'm going to stand up and start saying, no, in this argument, the Rambam and the Ramban, I think the Rambam's right. Who am I? I'm going to say I think the Rambam's right. I have a right to an opinion. I begin to understand what's driving the Rambam's opinion, what's driving the Ramban's opinion. So we'll get that in a second. But let's just remember who we're talking about. When we're talking about a Rishon, we're talking about someone that every sentence they say, we assume they remember every single Gemara, all of Shas. How many dafim is it? 7 times 365, right? 7.5 times 365. We're talking about over 2,000 dafim. They remember. And they remember. Okay. And they remember all the diukim, not only every Gemara. You know, it's one thing to remember every line, but they remember every nuance of what we infer from every line. We assume that any Rishon that said any statement had on his fingertips. That's the assumption we see. That's the way they talk. If Tosas asks on Rashi, he says, what about this Gemara? From this Gemara we can infer this. How could Rashi say that? He assumes Rashi knew that Gemara. Rashi knew the inference from that Gemara. And then how did Rashi say what he said? So it must be Rashi meant this way, Rashi meant that way, Rashi learned this way, Rashi learned that way. Whenever we learn Rishonim, we're working off of that assumption, and we see that that's how they wrote about themselves. You see it in their letters. They say, well, I wrote this, like the Rambam writes in one letter. I wrote that Kiddushe Kesef is Drabanan, and Kiddushe Bia is Doraisa. How do I know Kiddushe Bia is Doraisa? It doesn't say it in the Torah. Kiddushe Shtar is Doraisa. Because the Torah gives us a case of a woman who was married and was divorced and remained a virgin. So how could she ever have been married and divorced and remained a virgin biblically? Must be that there's a way of marriage biblically that is not just through Bia. There must be that the Torah, Midoraisa, recognizes a marriage by contract. That Doraisa. Inference. So the Rambam says, so when I wrote it, of course I had this and this and this and this in mind, and this and this and this inference from this Gemara and that Gemara in mind. Yeah. When we talk about Rishonim, these are people that had all of Shas on their fingertips and all the inferences in all of Shas on their fingertips. That's the assumption. That's what they held themselves accountable for. So we're not on a level where we can start ruling between them. Even the greatest rabbi today can't look back at a Rambam and Rashi and say, well, I think the Rambam's right. No such thing. We're not there. We're not on that level. Rav Shach couldn't do it. Rav Yashiv can't do it. We're not on that level. We cannot look back at someone 600 years ago. We're not big enough to say, and the greatest rabbi today could not say, I think so-and-so is right. We're not entitled to that opinion. We're not big enough. If we're going to have a big genius like the Gra, who lived a few generations later, he lived at a time where people no longer allowed themselves that right. But he was a tremendous genius, and he mastered all of Shas, and he knew things so well, he was entitled to do it. One person in the generation. The Shah Gesariah, another person in the generation. You have 2 in a generation after the Shulchan Aruch. But now, 500 years later, no one does that. The only place you'll find it is in high schools and in Baal Tshuva yeshivas. You could say the Rambam says this and the Ramban says that, and a high school student will say, well, the Rambam makes sense, the Ramban, that's just not it. And you'll find the same thing. I mean, when a guy enters yeshiva, so again, he feels like, I understand it, sure, this makes sense and that doesn't make sense. We don't begin to understand what was driving what each one said, how many proofs they had from all over that we don't know. So on our small level, we feel like we can express an opinion, but we have to understand it's because we're small, it's not because we're big, that we feel entitled to an opinion. So I'll get to where I'll get there, but I'm saying this is the first thing we have to know in understanding this. He's been waiting a long time. Yeah, Micha.
Yeah, that's
it. So, okay, yeah.
Because I'm wondering what has happened to us that we can't reach that understanding of those people 500-600 years ago or 500 years ago. What has happened? Because it's the Judaism, but sometimes I'm a biologist, I think, well, it is also in the secular world. The people don't have that kind of, like a homo universalis. Yes, nobody nowadays, okay, it has to do with the number of subjects, okay, but sometimes, but perhaps it's not the same, but what has happened? Is it the level of remembrance is the level of holiness, or what is this?
So, a few things happened. One thing that happened, it's not my opinion. I try not to say my opinion. No, because I don't feel entitled to an opinion. What has happened, the Rambam says, and it's inferred from the Gemara, is that Hashem created the world in a way that each generation goes down spiritually. And that's why we have an advance from Tanam to Amoraim, where Amoraim are on the level of Tanam, they can't argue on Tanam. And then you have Geonim, who can't argue on Amoraim. And then you have Rishonim, who don't argue on Tanam as well. And then you have Achronim, who don't argue on Rishonim. Because each generation goes down a level. That's one understanding of the Rambam, that Hashem made the world, that each generation that distances itself from Sinai, the greatest generation was at Sinai, and each generation has gone down a little bit. And sometimes, when we go down that little bit, is a major cross mark, like the difference between Rishonim and Achronim. That Achronim won't argue on Rishonim. There's no rule anywhere. We don't argue on them. They just recognize themselves. They reach a generation where they say, we're just not hitting it. We're not getting to be as great as they were. The Rav Shri Raigon writes, he doesn't say what the Rambam says. He says it's forgetting. We're losing our tradition a little bit at a time as we forget each generation. And it's the fact that we've been persecuted. So you have generations of persecution, and that doesn't allow us the ability to study like our predecessors studied. So we lose part of the tradition. So we go down in our ability to understand things. You have Rishonim who quote things from the time of Hillel that happened in the court of Hillel. It's not written in the Gemara anywhere. Tradition that they had from the court of Hillel. Only 1,000 years old, 1,500 tradition. We don't have that today. Go quote something from 500 years ago that happened in a bezin. We don't know. We don't have that tradition. So we find also that the periods where we went down were generally associated with periods of great turmoil in Judaism. Some say that what caused us to go down, again, this is theory, but some want to say that what caused us to go down from Rishonim to Achronim was the Crusades. You have the Spanish expulsion, you have the Crusades, and eventually that had its impact so that we lost our tradition on the level that we could no longer attain the levels of our predecessors. There's an aspect where it's also our fault. Meaning, until now what we presented was external forces. There's also an aspect where you just got to work hard. And we don't.
There's still people today that have memorized the Gemara.
Right, but it's not only a question of memory.
It's also
not okay. Just one second. Michal's waiting for a while. Yeah.
I guess like one I understand. I guess that you're saying that you're not cool line to decide between the Rambam and the Ramban. But it still seems to be at the same time, since you have to at some point feel like this is okay. I understand all these opinions. You know, you have to make sure you do honestly understand them, and that you're not just rushing them off on the side. But at some point, you need to, like you're studying the Gemara, let's say, and you have Rashi says this and Tosafot says that. At some point, I need to be able to say, if someone stuck me on a desert island, I need to do one way or another. I want to feel like there's at least one way that I feel a little bit more comfortable with. Everything can't just be theoretical. At some point, you have to say, what is the shot that, you know, if I were to try to, if a five-year-old asked you, What's the answer? You can't tell. You know, at some point, you have to feel like you have at least one answer that you feel the most comfortable with, and that you still know those. You still want to make sure that you understand those ones fully, and that you're not just placed brushing them off. But
so we'll get there. We'll get there. When it comes to halacha, so we have a tradition. How we reach halachic conclusions, we have Shulchan Aruch, we have guidelines. When it comes to Hashkafa, so there's also a certain tradition, as we discussed earlier. Before we discuss what we take on for ourselves, what we ourselves are going to call it connect with, we have to recognize what we've discussed until now, that these people are much greater than the greatest rabbi today, and for us to stick our heads in and start ruling this way or that way is way beyond our ability. Now, that being said, a person learns many different things. In the time of the Rishonim, or in the time directly at the end of the Rishonim, so you had people who were great enough that they could say, I've got it all down pat. I have all the shas. I have all of what this Rishon said and that Rishon said. And what makes sense to me, not because of any partiality, but as an impartial, logical person who has tradition on how to achieve halachic ruling, I've come to the conclusion that A is right or B is right, and that's how I'm going to rule. That's the way it should have remained, but we went down many levels and we cannot do that anymore. There is an aspect where we sometimes will do that. A great posek, what he does when he learns the Mishnah Brura and the Aruch HaShulchan and they disagree, he does have to give halachic ruling, and that halachic ruling is going to stem from what makes sense to him. But that's again, without being partial, and after learning everything and knowing everything the way he should. There is a level where a person will make that discernment, but not me or you, someone who's big enough to be a posek, to give a halachic ruling. There a person does apply what makes sense to him, but again, what makes sense to him is on an impartial, pure, logical, and knowing the rules of psak, not just, this seems more right to me. This jives with me. It's not that way. But what about our own lives? So in halacha, we have to go with halacha. We should have a rebbe. In hashkafa, we should also have a rebbe. And we have to take care, when we choose philosophies, we don't always know the ramifications. We see the here and now, and we feel what resonates with us. But there are many implications. We don't always know to gauge those implications. There was a guy who said, I go with an opinion that says you don't leave Eretz Yisrael Chutzlarts for anything. And then his father got ill. His father needed him to come to Chutzlarts. But he had been preaching for years, you don't leave for anything. I never went for a simcha. I never did. Okay, who said that's right? When he first took this on, so it made sense to him. Eretz Yisrael, it's so holy. We've been dying this. He could give you 1,000 speeches about why this is right. But you reach a point where, okay, who says it's right? He didn't think of all the possible ramifications when he started it. It's good if a person can find the Rebbe in Hashkafa as well. Hashkafa is very complicated and it has ramifications. And it's good if a person can find a Rebbe who could help him and work with him in defining how he's going to go. It's very dangerous for a person to start picking and choosing within Hashkafa. It's natural that when we learn, we feel more comfortable with A than with B. And so long as it's theoretical, so, okay, who's to say this is right or that's right? And it's good that a person can find things that he feels comfortable with and that he can connect with. But being that you're presenting it as something, this is how I'm going to live my life, it's not just a question of this is what I feel comfortable with. When I'm going to read the story of Avram and Sarah, I'm going to say that when Avram told Sarah, Mahari, he wasn't telling his wife, Rush. He was using the Arabic word for sift. Mahari, you sift the flour and I'll go take care of the food, of the meat. Okay, you want to go with that understanding, who cares? It has no practical ramifications. That's how you want to teach your son. Avram didn't tell his wife, Rush. He was speaking respectfully to his wife. He told her, you sift, I'll take care of the meat. Okay, translate to your son, Mahari, that way. You want to teach your son the parsha of Avram and the angels and tell him that the way the Rambam said it, that it was all a vision of prophecy, angels didn't really walk into his house. Fine. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about things that are going to have practical ramifications. And there, sometimes the questions of Hashkafa can be more powerful than the questions of Halakha. If a person decides that makes sense to me. This is the geula. I have to go live in a yeshuv. The fact that I'm risking my life and my kids' life and everything, that doesn't matter. This is the right thing to do. This is what I'm doing. He's going to say, this is a hashkafa question. It's not only a hashkafa question. It has ramifications on halacha, much bigger ramifications than a question, are you going to go spardir Ashkenazi on Hilchos Yichud, or are you going to go spardir Ashkenazi on Hilchos returning things to Plata on Shabbos? This is your whole life. This is a question of risking your life. And it's so not only with regard to this. Person's decision, will he go to college? Will he learn full-time? Will he learn part-time? Many of the major decisions of what our life is going to look like are related to Ashkafa. And it's true that a person wants Ashkafa, which he can connect with. But it's also true that we're very partial. And if we're going to take Hashkafa and say, I'll do what jives with me, then we're not shooting for the truth. We're shooting for what I feel. And that's very dangerous. So I think that even though there are many Hashkafot, and you can find validity for many attitudes within Judaism, it's beneficial for a person to find a Rav who understands him and can work with him and help him in finding the Hashkafot that will work for him. But it's, I think, very important to find a Rav. I don't think it's something which a person can achieve the correct formula as a do-it-yourself. And this can apply to many things. Take a simple question. A guy's in Shidduchim. He was offered three different girls today. And I was thinking, wait a second. Girl A makes sense because of this. Girl B makes sense because of that. Girl C makes sense because of the other thing. Now, girl A, I have a question mark. What about this, this, and that? Girl B, I have a different question mark about. Girl C, I have a third question mark about. Who am I going to go out with? These are the best offers I ever had. Now, what's my status? What am I supposed to do? Maybe I'm supposed to spend the next 10 hours verifying about girl A, girl B, girl C. Maybe I'm supposed to go out with all three, because God forbid, I'll miss one of them. Maybe they're all supposed to be my wife. Oh, one of them is supposed to be my wife. What do I do? Now, it sounds funny, but it's real. When we're faced with real questions, so often in our lives, the questions of Hashkafa can have ramifications that are much larger than halachic questions. And when a person decides, well, this is what works for me, and I found the basis for it in Rishonim, so this is what I'm going to do, a person can sometimes make very major decisions that affect many people, himself and others, and affect the way his whole life works, the way he's going to lead his life, and it's not necessarily right.
What other choices do you have?
To find a Rebbe. I'll give you an example. I started learning, and I came across a machlokas Rishonim. Should every person take full time and learn? Or maybe a person is also supposed to work part of the time, and a person is supposed to develop other things, and he has a responsibility to learn a good part of the day. There's a machlokas as to how we view exactly what is every person supposed to learn every spare minute of the day. Today, that's the adopted opinion. Everyone will tell you that's the way to go. But not everyone always agreed with that. So I came to Rav Pesen Zatzal, and I said, isn't it so that there are really two prevalent opinions in Hashkafa as to whether a person is always supposed to take full time and learn? And he answered me a very short, smart sentence. He said, but who said that's right for you? No, he said it differently. He said, who says you have a right to go that route? So I said, but aren't there two opinions? So he said, but who said you have a right to go that route? That was all he said. If I would have left it to myself, it's much more convenient going to college. I had offers of scholarships. I was planning on going to college. I wanted to have a degree. I figured I'd learn on the side. I'd be a good Jew. I'd do Daf Yomi. I wouldn't have ended up here. We wouldn't be sitting here tonight. And maybe you'd have someone better sitting here. I don't know if it was good or not. But I wouldn't be here. From my perspective, I wouldn't be here. If it were left up to myself, picking and choosing Ashkafas, believe me, the other way is much more convenient. And very often that's what's going to guide us in choosing our Ashkafot. It's not necessarily the truth. Just like in Halakha, if it were up to ourselves, we'd choose and we'd end up with what was good for us. In Ashkafa, we're also going to go that way.
So how is it to
turn? I don't like getting personal. Let's say.
You brought this example.
Okay, so I consulted with a Rebbe of mine. And he pointed out to me that even though we can find validity for another way of doing things, but that doesn't mean that that's valid for me. Considering what God, the abilities God gave me, what I could do here, what I could do there, and where I can grow. So every person has a responsibility according to where he's at. I thought about it for a long time. I didn't just take what he said and walk away. I came back, I asked him questions, I discussed it with him. But if it were left up to me, I wouldn't be here today. Oh, I'd be a lawyer, I'd be a doctor, I'd be many things. I wouldn't be here. I'd learn on the side. But I'll buy, you know, we always think we'll learn on the side.
Can we get 10 seconds for now?
Yeah, did you want something pertaining to this? I want to add one point as far as going with a specific hashkafa. It is beneficial to recognize that there are other hashkafot. And this is true also in halakha. A person can say, I don't eat this and it's not kosher. Or a person can say, I don't eat this. And I know there are rabbis that say it's good and I respect that. And whoever wants to follow those rabbis could. And my rabbis say, we don't eat, that I shouldn't go with this opinion. So I don't. But there's a marked difference between respecting another opinion and not. Within Orthodox Judaism, we try to respect other opinions. If we say Reform, Conservative, they're just out of it. We don't respect that. We feel they've broken out of Orthodoxy, and they themselves declare that. That's not the way of our tradition. And we have no respect for that. Now, we can respect the people, but we don't respect the philosophies. But within Orthodoxy, so you have this movement and that movement, and you can have a chassid that goes this way, and a litvak that goes that way, and a yeki that goes a different way, and a dati lumi that goes another way. Even though a person might subscribe to a specific way of life and a specific philosophy, he should at least be broad-minded enough to respect that there are others who feel differently. So long as a movement has a leader who's a big rabbi. Not every movement within what we'll broadly describe orthodoxy, not every movement has a leader who's a rabbi who's fitting to lead a movement. Just because a person got smicha once upon a time doesn't mean he's fitting to lead a movement within Judaism. And there are movements that way, and it's very sad that those people who are leading them don't recognize that they're not fit to be leading a movement. They might be a rabbi, maybe, but they're not fit to lead a movement within Judaism. It's two different things. You have to be very big to lead a movement. At the same time, I don't think at our level, our job is to fight wars. And it very easily spills over from a philosophical disagreement to disliking the other person, which is problematic. A girl once came to the Kotel, and she grew up in a Reformed temple, and she came to Israel. She didn't know anything, and so she went to the men's side. So you'd think that if you see that men are going to one side and women are going to the other side, go to the women's side. But she didn't.
I once went into a bathroom and all the women somehow didn't click with me.
I was standing in Shaarei Tzedek, second floor, emergency room floor. And I see the bathroom signs, and I can't tell which one is men and women. So I asked the guy standing next to me, I said, look, I'm here without my glasses. Could you tell me, is this the men's stall or the women's stall? So he tells me, of course it's the men's stall, and walks away. And a second later, a woman walks out. I don't know who was right. I figured, okay, if a woman's coming out of that one, then I guess the other one, that's the sign that means men. But their signs were so similar that I wasn't sure, and he wasn't sure, or she wasn't sure.
Some.
Okay, so this girl had the same thing. She comes to the Kotel and it doesn't click that she is entering the men's section. I guess that's what she's used to from temple, that everyone goes into the same side. So she wasn't aware that there was this separation. And the men, there were some men there who thought that she's like coming to break a wall of tznius. And they pounced on her. And the Chilul Hashem, I don't know if they pounced physically, but they certainly started yelling at her. And the Chilul Hashem that ensued, the girl walked away from there, not only in tears, but certainly feeling very, very distanced from Judaism. Now, I'm not saying what she did was right, but she made a mistake. We can respect the person. We don't have to hate a person. We can say, look, I don't agree with the movement. I don't agree with what they're doing, but this is a human being standing before me. As a human being, okay? I can treat him as a human being. I could say, excuse me. There's a way that we've accepted upon ourselves here at the Kotel. This is the accepted, if you don't mind. There's another side. There's a mechitza. That's where the women pray. There's a way to talk to a person. And the problem when we take on a certain philosophy and when we look at another view and we say, no, that's not mine. So very often we not only say that's not mine, but we also say they're not mine. And that's wrong. We're one people. Now, the next question, what you're bringing up, I want to have a separate recording.
I think it takes to understand.